Live Wild's Connection Matters podcast, bringing together heart-centered, nature-connected, curious people who share the inquiry, how can we create a connected and meaningful way of living that brings more health, happiness and growth to our world? My name is Leona Johnson and I am your host. This is episode one. Well, hello, beautiful humans. Welcome to the Connection Matters podcast. I'm so excited to be launching this today. I'm so excited to be speaking with you. And thank you so much for tuning in. This podcast has been something that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. But as soon as we came into lockdown, it just felt like it was so needed. Like, now is the right time. Now is the time to talk about connection in all its forms and bring together the voices of some of the really amazing, inspirational people that I know of, and hopefully in the process I will discover more of. So welcome, and I want to say, be gentle with me. I am new to this, and although I know exactly what I want to get out of this, which is for people to feel inspired, which is for people to feel creative and like they want to maybe get in touch with some of the people that we interview or do some of the work or look more into some of the things that we discuss. Despite all this, I'm still very nervous. And although the material speaks for itself, really, I'm just asking you to be kind and generous with your critique. And then hopefully this will bring ripples out into the world of the things that are really meaningful to me, which is how we speak to ourselves, how we connect to ourselves and how we understand ourselves, how we speak to each other and understand each other on a local level and a community and global level, and also how we relate to the natural world, how we nurture and tend our relationships with the other than humans that are out there, as well as understanding that we are nature, we're part of nature. So I came to do this podcast out of a background for me in social work. I started in social work, and through the first part of my life when I was a social worker, I was also exploring alternative ways of living, alternative ways of being and communicating and learning and understanding the world, because for me, I didn't feel connected. I didn't feel like I belonged or that I knew how to be in the world, and I didn't feel that we were shown that. So it was a big and interesting journey, and it's led me through lots of different learning modalities, but here I am today, having explored forest schools, permaculture, nonviolent communication, the work that reconnects, grief work, just to name a few. And because of that, because I've dipped my toe into all of these different communities and ways of being, I've made some really amazing contacts and had some really inspirational teachers and looked at the world through a number of different lenses, which I think hopefully brings some really interesting conversations. So my first guest today is the amazing Sarah Tasker, who generously offered to be my guinea pig by being my first interviewee, but she's actually done so much more than that. Sarah and I met at the school gates, which you'll hear a bit more about in the conversation, but she has supported Live Wild for quite some time, with giving us support and advice and really believing in what it is that we're trying to do in the world as an organisation. And when I said I wanted to do this podcast, she jumped at the opportunity to support me. So I'm eternally grateful, and I owe so much to her, really, because she gave me the confidence to just go for it. So thank you, Sarah. Thanks so much. Sarah is, as well as a friend, she's a writer, a photographer and a coach, as well as a major Instagram influencer and a successful podcast host. Please listen to the end. We share a little bit about some of the amazing giveaways and bonuses that you get if you become a Patreon member, as well as hearing about what we're going to be talking about in the next episode. Again, I'd like to say be gentle with me. Remember, this is my first episode and I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Leona.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for speaking to me today. I've been really looking forward to it.
Me too. I'm glad to be here.
I really like to start with just a brief check-in and sharing some gratitude, if that's all right. I can go first. I've just been out for a walk in the woods near me and the sun's shining and the birds are singing, and I've really, as today and in the last few weeks, appreciated so much living in a really beautiful place, especially knowing where everybody else, you know, where a lot of other people are right now. I'm feeling, yeah, really grateful to have a little garden, even though it's teeny tiny, and places to walk when I go out for my daily exercise. And that the weather has been so nice, you know, just shining in on me right now, sunshine and this sort of stillness that seems to go with what's going on in the outside world for me. Yeah, especially after we had months and months of rain and a lot of flooding. So it's like a big contrast. And yeah, every moment at the moment, I really feel how lucky I am to sort of have a secure home and have outdoor space. How's it been for you?
My list is so similar to yours. Like, the sunshine has been the most beautiful gift during this time. And I keep thinking, like, how much harder we would all have found it if it had just been day after day after day of the rain and the grey. Like, the sunshine is, like, just calling you to go outside, and there's no excuses now. We've all got the time. So we've just been out as a family every single day, like walking to fields, sitting in fields. There's this tree that Orla loves to climb. Orla's my daughter, she is 7. And yeah, just to have all of that. It wasn't that long ago, 5 years or so, that we were living in the city and had none of that at our disposal. And so I never ever take it for granted. But right now I'm just so, so grateful for it.
Yeah, definitely. So just to introduce you, Sarah, to the listeners, Sarah and I met a few years ago because we live quite close together, actually, don't we?
Yeah.
And our daughters, our children go to the same kindergarten and school setting. And so we really met at the school gates, didn't we? And in the woods and outdoors, and we met as parents, really. And it's only over time that Sarah's got to know a little bit about what I do with Live Wild and has been really supportive with that. And that I slowly caught on to to all of the things that you're doing behind the scenes, because at the school gate, you know, people just seem like people, don't they? And bit by bit, I was catching on to your podcast and your beautiful Instagram offerings and the various other things you do. I wonder if you'd be willing to share a little bit about what it is that you do and about yourself.
Sure. What is it I do? I never know how to answer that question because I don't have a nice tidy job description, although I'm sure you have the same problem, probably a lot of people listening do. So I started out just taking photographs and posting them on Instagram of my daily life with my daughter Orla when she was born. I was on maternity leave, I was feeling really disconnected, I wasn't really managing to leave the house very often, and I found community on my phone, like strapped to my sofa with this baby asleep on me. And from there I was really curious and really interested in finding out what else I could do around that, and gradually it's evolved to now, kind of 7 years on, it's my full-time business. I teach classes on all of that stuff, community online, photography, sharing your story and finding the people who want to hear it. I have a podcast, I have a book that was a bestseller, my husband works for me as well, and we've just built this amazing life around something that really just started out as me seeking human connection in whatever way I could.
Oh, well, that's a funny thing for me to think about, internet and connection, because as you know, the work that I do is outdoors and it's about bringing people into the outdoors, because our ever increasing indoor lifestyles, screen based lifestyles, yeah, and car based lifestyles have removed us bit by bit away from nature and away from the daily cycles and the cycles of the year and the cycles that keep us connected to being human. And yet what I've seen through the things that you've offered has been really has been beauty, has been like attention to the small details of life that bring magic, you know, that wonder and that opportunity to be present and see around us what is beautiful. Would that be a fair
assessment? That feels completely true. Like, my driving force for so long has just been like the magic in the mundane, and that's something that's always been my thing, like way before predates Instagram or anything. But I think that's where the traction around my account came from, and how I've built such a large audience is kind of giving other people permission to find that too, and to be like, actually, the only thing that happened today was some sun came through the window and it shone on the peaches on my windowsill, because I didn't leave the house and I have a baby at the time, and but that was the best moment of my day. But that was still a moment to be cherished and to be remembered and to be shared and talked about. And I think the permission for all of us to be mindful in that way of the beautiful moments in our mundane everyday lives was something that really resonated with so many people.
Mm-hmm. So how have you managed to do that and capture that and then make it a lifestyle?
I think it started for me at that time on Instagram. So I was living in a part of Manchester where all we looked out on was more red brick terraces and concrete. There was literally no nature, no birdsong, no nothing. We had like a small park that you could walk to that was like, you know, your dedicated square of green space with fencing all around it. And nothing about where I was living connected with me. Nothing felt right. I felt very displaced. And I was living in this home that I hadn't even chosen, because I'd moved in with my boyfriend, now my husband, and he'd bought that with an ex-partner. So it wasn't something I would have chosen. And I felt like my big picture was all wrong. And I couldn't control that. I didn't have the ability to control any of that. But what I could control was the small picture, like literally the small picture, the tiny squares that I was taking for Instagram. So it was my way of tuning into what still brings me joy, even when the big picture is not what I would be choosing. Like, what can I still connect to? How can I still feel gratitude for exactly what I've got? And because there was nobody and no place in my life to put that or to share that or to kind of celebrate that, Instagram and then my blog became a place where I could record it and kind of live in it. And what I've always loved so much about Instagram is going back on my own feed and scrolling back through all these moments I've collected, and it brings me so much gratitude and joy, because it's like a highlight reel of my days. And it's not a showy highlight reel. It's not like me on Caribbean beaches in a bikini. It's not that thing that people so often associate with social media. It's literally like the nice tea I drank, the time I made a cake and it didn't burn, like the way the light comes through the bathroom window in the morning. And that for me, it was a connection with myself, and that became then a connection with a wider community of people who saw the world like I do.
I love that. I love that because for the last few years, I've really been cultivating this practice of gratitude. And I know that a lot of people have an issue with that word, and also maybe associate it, I think, wrongly with positive thinking and this sort of wave of positivity that
slightly Pollyanna-ish.
Yeah, a little bit resistant to it, and finding, you know, there's lots of things going on in the world. But actually, for me, the practice of gratitude, of waking up and just giving thanks for my life, and you know that I can switch a switch and the light comes on, and turn the tap and the tap runs,
clean
and
drinking water,
and I have all, and I have these small things, and bringing those. I keep a gratitude journal, and every evening with my kids we talk about the things that made us smile today, and you know, focusing on those things doesn't mean that I'm not a real person, doesn't mean that I'm denying all of the negative things or the tricky things that happen in a day or in the world, but it's really changed where I focus my attention and brought me into a space, much more healthy space, I believe, where I can see and feel every moment for what it is, rather than and tending to see the beauty and the wonder in the world, rather than always being laden down with the pressures of modern life. And it feels like You know, you've done that visually with your photos and the things that you write about as well. And that, yeah, it feels like it's a version of a gratitude practice, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because Instagram has this reputation. I mean, social media in general, but Instagram in particular, we tend to give it a really negative slant, and the media loves to do this, and it's like a really popular opinion to be like, oh, it's bragging, or it's humble bragging, or it's not reality. But it is exactly what you've just described. It's people focusing on the good in their lives instead of the bad. It's us gathering up and curating, like, these are my best bits, and celebrating them and sharing them with other people. And that is not inherently bad. That is just what humans do in order to not constantly, like, can you imagine if we all just put the worst parts of our life on Instagram all the time? What a terrible, depressing place it would be. And one of the strange things that I found really early on with Instagram that still stayed true is sometimes when there is nothing that I can connect to in my day to feel that gratitude and celebrate, having the practice of Instagram or blogging or whatever it is, a gratitude journal, can be enough to kind of drive me to action to create something. And so that might be like, I baked in the early days, I might bake a cake so I had something to take a picture of because I hadn't left the house. And that sounds so disingenuous, I think, when you first hear it, like, oh, you baked a cake for Instagram. But at the end of the day, I still got to enjoy the whole process of making the cake. I got to eat the cake. I got to share my process. And I don't think there's any part of that that's inherently bad. I actually think, like, motivation is motivation. Gratitude is gratitude. What if we just let ourselves enjoy it?
What if we just did? It's a really interesting conversation to be having right now because we are in lockdown. We are with a lot of the rest of the world all at the same time, confined to spaces in a situation that is completely unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of time, I mean, I know that there are so many people who are stuck in places they really don't want to be. But there are a lot of people who are, you know, we may not like what's going on, but we have got space for the first time. And I'll speak for myself, you know, I never thought I would have this time and space with my kids and at home again, actually. And it's really made me look at myself and look at all the excuses that I've made in the past and I'm still making for not doing the creative and fun and beautiful things that I say and think I want to do.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that's about, you know, and so it's allowing me to explore that. And actually, as time goes on, I'm actually getting more and more creative and finding that I'm being able to do the things that I say that I want to do.
I think a big part of that is like permission. I recorded a podcast. I have a joint podcast with my friend Jen Carrington where we kind of do business coaching and people write in problems. And someone was saying she is finding, like, she's always had this business, she's been like go go go, and now she's having this period that we're all having where she's at home, she's enjoying the time with her children, she's like exercised for the first time in 13 years, she's doing crafts with her kids and they're walking, and she's like, how do I not go back when this ends to where I was before? So we kind of spent this time like digging into that question. And I think a gift that a lot of us are getting right now is that we kind of get to try before we buy with all the stuff that we thought we always wanted to do. Like, we're getting plunged into this once in a lifetime, hopefully, opportunity to live all of these things. But we're also we're kind of off the hook. We've kind of been given a bit of an excuse because we can't work. A lot of us can't work. So it's not really the same choice that we normally have to make, which is work is over here and it's kind of vying for our attention and it's how we put the roof over our heads and it's really, really important. And over here on the other side is all this kind of beautiful crafting, baking, nature, walking, all of the other stuff we want to be doing. Right now, like, it's an easy choice to make because the work one's off the table.
Yeah.
But when we go back, the work one is going to be back at full volume. And that is a much harder choice to make because there's either way, you've kind of got to sacrifice something. Right now, there's no sacrifice in choosing it. So I think it's an amazing gift for us right now to do exactly what you've been talking about and really look at, like, well, why am I not choosing this? And what are the gifts this brings to me that maybe are not as showy and flashy as the money and the food in the cupboards and everything else? They're not as immediately obvious, but the gifts that I want to hold on to. Like, how amazing that we get to experience them firsthand instead of having to just imagine them and push them down our to-do list like we've always done. I don't know if that made sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've been wondering the same things. I did ask on my Facebook couple of weeks ago, there was one thing that you could keep out of this lockdown experience, what would it be? And what people came back with were all of the things that you imagine. You know, there's no cars on the roads, there's like birds singing, I get more time to play with my kids, I'm actually baking, I'm exercising every day, I feel much healthier, and I'm communicating more with my family and my loved ones, even though it's via internet in pretty much most cases. People are actually looking out for each other, connecting with neighbours. You know, my neighbours, we've set up a WhatsApp group, and again, it's a technology-based connection, which I feel so grateful that we've got. But actually, there are people on my street who I've been living here for, you know, more than 3 years, and didn't really know anybody's names and didn't know anything about anybody. And all of a sudden, we're swapping books and seeds and dropping off shopping at each other's doors and coming out and clapping every week and you know, connecting in the street. And it's a different type of connection, but I love it. I love the fact that I'm thinking to have Zoom calls with family that's all around the country. And I would never have dreamed of doing that before.
And it was always available. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, always. And so I wonder, I also wonder what is it going to lead to? What and how can we, that same very same question, how can we maintain the things that we've appreciated whilst getting back, you know, the freedom that we also long for?
So an exercise I recommended to my letter writer in that podcast that I've been doing for myself is writing, kind of taking some time every few days to write all the things that I'm believing right now. Because if you think like that Zoom call was always possible to you, but something got in the way, some thoughts must have got in the way previously for you thinking it was worthwhile. Like maybe it was, I'm too busy, or everyone else is too busy, or I'll do it next week, or all of those thoughts. And I think most of us will fall back into believing those things again when lockdown ends and some sort of normality returns. So kind of pinpointing right now what we're believing to be true, like maybe it's everyone's got enough time for me, or like the Zoom call is better than no call, or like a WhatsApp group with my neighbours is better than not talking to my neighbours. I think those are really interesting to note, and then we'll be able to look back at them with kind of our future eyes and realise that those beliefs are still all available to us. Like we could believe all the time that everyone has enough time for us and test it out. And we could believe, like, it's so fascinating to me, and I can hear it in your words, and I hear it all the time because it's the default so many of us work with. Like we think digital connection is a compromise or is like not great, but okay. And what we've kind of been forced into with lockdown is like accepting that it's the only really option. And therefore everyone's embracing it, and I think because I've always been so techno joy, I've always been like, this is amazing, look at all the things it can do for me. I've never placed that distinction for myself. Like I've always been like, connection is connection. If it feeds that part of us that needs to be in a community, I will take it however I can get it. And I love that people are experiencing that now, and I hope that we bring that forwards into kind of the changed world when we come out of this.
So there are so many things that I'd love to talk about in relation to that. Where do we focus? I feel like the question of much more internet time is, you know, that is a question for me, because I want people to be outside more. So how do we meet that? But I do see the value in all of these online circles, you know, in the Zoom and the house party and the many other platforms that there are for connecting in groups. When is it time to draw the line with that, though? How do we know? How do we know? Because I feel like in some ways I dread turning the computer on, because I need to, I know that I'll, you know, all these things will ping at me, and there's all these, I quite enjoy living in the bubble of no FOMO, you know, I don't know what's going on. So I can quite happily live here now in my little bubble and not feel like I'm missing out on everything. But
it requires mindfulness, it requires intentionality. And I think a good analogy for it is kind of food, in the way that food can be so nourishing and joyful and essential for us. But how many of us in times of stress or in times of like just any sort of uncomfortable emotion start to let food slip into being kind of a coping mechanism or a way to distract ourselves or an unhealthy thing in our lives as well? And that's the human condition. Like, there are so many things that we will all do that with. And the internet is just the latest offering in that, that it can be beautiful, it can be wonderful, and it can also be a way to kind of numb out and remove ourselves from our day-to-day lives. And I think we are all, as humans, at the very beginning of really honing that relationship, and kind of like a kid when you first let them at sugar, like, they sometimes need to binge and go too far and touch the fire to realize, actually, like, I made myself sick, I don't need any more of that, a little bit is going to be enough.
Do you think we have that capacity? Because I feel like, actually, after all, you know, the gaming and a lot of social media is designed in a way to hook us.
I love that question, and like it's a huge question. I have a podcast with an author called Nir Eyal, who wrote a book called Indistractable, and he talks about how he basically wrote the book on how people make those apps and those games so that it appeals to your brain and that you want to keep going with it. And so then he wrote a book about how people can avoid being sucked into the cycle. And what he says, and what I've certainly found to be true, is like, the bigger question is really not, is social media the problem? Is the phone the problem? Is the food the problem? What we need to get back to is recognizing why we feel this urge to check out of our lives, and why we're driven in the first place to overindulge in things that don't feel good. Like, the point of overindulgence very rarely feels good. You know, when you're like eating, I've been eating like huge buckets of popcorn, and like your mouth is burning from the soul and you feel horrible, but you keep going. And that is counterintuitive. And I think it kind of, like, it's a bigger question, but for me, it goes back to how we don't really teach our children and teach one another to sit in negative emotion and allow ourselves to feel bored or uncomfortable or anxious or sad. And we're kind of taught right from being young, oh, like, you should be happy. The point of life is to be happy. So we're constantly seeking pleasure and happiness instead of being like, huh, today I just feel sad. I'm in grief. You know, I'm stressed. And letting ourselves feel it instead of trying to numb out. And I think that's the real reason that all of us as humans feel it, find it hard to self-regulate. It's not that we don't have the capacity, it's that we've not had much practice. And these things are hugely rewarding, like, they're massive for our dopamine receptors. And I remember reading some research about heroin addicts who were saying after their first hit of heroin, it was like something in their brain changed and they couldn't take pleasure anymore from a walk in the park or from like sitting and looking at someone they love. That had just gone, and they had to really like massively readjust their scales to get back to a place where the dopamine, the smaller amount of dopamine you get from those quiet pleasures, can still feel good compared to the huge elevated pleasure they'd given themselves by going way beyond what the human brain is designed for.
Oh yes, I love that. I love that taking it away from, oh, screens and technology is the problem, or, oh yes, it's the food that we get given or that is produced in the factories that is the problem, but that actually it is about lifestyle and the world around us, environment, isn't it, and what's going on in this time that are creating such a need within us to check out or to just become addicted to different things, you know, whether that's shopping or TV or food or socializing even, you know, it's a way of us avoiding presence.
Like, how many people are really struggling right now because they used exercise and going to the gym as their coping strategy and they can't do it? I think that's really fascinating, because we see that as like a healthy thing. Like, society is like, oh, exercise, it's good for you. But it's the same thing as scrolling for hours on social media or watching porn or like eating all of the crisps. It's the same thing, because you're not allowing yourself to be present.
And I love what you said about not allowing ourselves to sit with uncomfortable feelings and be unhappy sometimes, or allow our children to be bored. We're so used to constant stimulation, constant drive, constant pushing ourselves to achieve, or not pushing ourselves and avoiding through, you know, multiple series on Netflix or whatever. And it feels like, you know, that is life these days, and there's a lot of denial of the negative feelings. We either numb out or we do quite destructive things, or we do really positive things, but we can't not do them. And that's an addiction, and that's also not healthy. Right. And it feels to me like, you know, we don't really have the mechanism in the way that we live to be able to process our difficult feelings, whether that's sadness or anger, frustration, apathy even is a sort of a sign, isn't it, of all of one of these negative
things.
And we don't have those places. We don't really, we're not. I wonder about that. I wonder if that is part of the disconnected society that we live in.
Because we're disconnected from 50% of our emotions. Like, and I say all this like I know it, but my daughter comes to me crying, and the first thing I say is, shh, don't cry, it's okay, I'll make it better. Like, I try and cheer her up. Because mm-hmm. that's just how we have been taught. Like, mm-hmm. you should try and be happy, you should try and not feel bad. And how fascinating that we're living this time right now where everyone's emotions are heightened, positive and negative. And we've been stripped of so many of our distractions and our coping strategies and the things that we were using to kind of buffer it away. And that thing you mentioned earlier about even then, we weren't all like, brilliant, now it's time to go and go for walks and do crafting. We all went, oh, now what? I guess I'll just eat all the crisps. But hang on, there's no crisps at the supermarket, so I can't do that. I guess I'll just watch all the Netflix and scroll social media indefinitely. And I think that just goes to prove it, that really, like, you could take away all of these things. You could take away the internet, you could take away smartphones and sugar. We still have this struggle until we come to terms with how do we allow negative emotion and not resist it.
And I feel like, you know, what's happening right now is a little bit like a pressure cooker for everything that was already there.
Yeah.
So but now, obviously, there are a lot of there's a lot of trauma, you know, occurring, and there's a lot of people who are in abusive situations who really aren't in a good situation. But those things already existed. A lot of the things that are creating these really negative situations right now, the loneliness and the, you know, the isolation and the abusive family situations, they already existed. And this is like a pressure cooker that's causing all of those to be seen and addressed. And so it's true that inside of it, I guess there will be a lot of work to be done to help people heal. But actually that work, I feel, has been needed for a long time. And I, you know, I've been doing grief training around how can we bring grief tending practices to our everyday life, so that we're not so scared of feeling negative feelings, and we're not so even scared of death. And how can we actually work in a way that brings and makes this okay to feel sad sometimes, and for other people to accept that around you and not try and fix it all the time, so that we can build resilience. Because actually the world that we're going to move into is going to be unpredictable, isn't it? It's going to be very different to what we have known.
Yes.
And that's been happening for a long time, hasn't it? It's been changing and speeding up, and who knows where it's going to lead. But I think one of the things that we can teach ourselves most is to allow our difficult feelings. And for me, that's where nature comes in, because any time that I can go out and sit under a tree, or, you know, take a walk, or notice the beauty and allow myself, you know, allow tears to fall on the ground or whatever, that's when I feel like I'm releasing those negative things that are going to hold me back and make me feel tense and stressed with my life.
I think nature is such a good reminder as well that, like, everything in life is 50-50. Like, there's the good and there's the bad. There's the cruelty and there's the beauty. And there's the seasons of death and decay and fallow and no mm-hmm. life. And there's the seasons of rebirth and beauty and joy and celebration. And so I think it's almost like a living meditation that we get to kind of soak in. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, one of the things I always come back to is when I think about my own creativity, like blossom trees, and how for about 2 weeks of the year they are amazing and they're full of colour and they are just a complete joy to behold. And the rest of the year they're just very quiet and nobody really notices them and they're just doing their thing. And half the year they look dead and you wouldn't even think there was anything going on there. And like, there's just so many lessons that we can take like that, because we are part of nature. And in the same way that the trees don't resist, they're not like, I'm going to hold on to my leaves. I don't want to lose my leaves. This isn't the fun part of the cycle. They just let it go. And that's where we need to get to.
The cycles. Yes. Yes. I feel like because have a much more indoor lifestyle, you know, even when we are allowed to move around, generally we're moving from our house to our cars, and then from our cars to our place of work, and then back to the cars. And sometimes people will have a dog, or that, you know, they'll have reason to go outside more. But even me, who's a nature connector who works outdoors, if sometimes I've got to say, even in the winter, I only really get outside when I'm working. And maybe that's, you know, because I'm working outside a lot, I need to spend some time being cozy and indoors. But
it's also the human brain wants comfort.
Yeah, like exactly. I feel like sometimes I would just actually, you know, cocoon myself in. And maybe that's okay, actually, because animals do that, don't they? But the other side of it is, when we tune into the natural cycles, when we used to have to chop wood or collect food or walk more places than we do now, we would have felt and seen the seasons change a lot more. And that's in our body, it's in our DNA. Yes. That's, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, that's how we've evolved to know these cycles. And having a lifestyle where we're so disconnected from them a lot of the time really feels like is part of the problem. You know, we don't give ourselves those fallow times, we don't give those ourselves those dormant times, and we expect a lot of ourselves. We expect ourselves to be able to keep on and
be the capitalist dream, right? Every day is the same. Every day is exactly as productive as the one before. And nature is completely anti-capitalist.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. Mm. So one of the things that we talked about before was, you know, finding our creativity. I remember a few weeks back, I was thinking, I want to be creative. I just don't know what to do. I want to be able to use this time well, but how do I do that? And I was wondering, I know that you do various challenges and things for people, if you had any ideas around how people can connect with what it is that's burning to come out of them.
Yeah, I think creativity is a really fascinating topic as well, because so many of us feel like we have no ownership over the word, probably because of the school system, where like the people who got put into GCSE art were the creative ones, and everything else was like, it's not yours, you can't have it. And that we are so tied to the idea of like results, good results with our creativity, which was never the point. Like, you know, you talked about humans and how we've evolved, and like creativity was how we survived. We were meant to be like weaving baskets and making like fishing rods and building houses and making meals out of the few things that we could gather. Like creativity was never about having something beautiful that you would want to show to everybody at the end of it. It was about necessity. So I think the first part of that question is really like just giving yourself permission to create with zero expectations, like creating something that you're just going to throw in the bin at the end of it, which is always a fun experiment. Anyone with a parent, like the amount of times I find myself being like, oh, don't use all the glitter, don't use all the stickers up, like save them. What are we saving them for? Let's just stick them all on a piece of paper right now, knowing that piece of paper is going to go in the bin. Like that is the freedom of creativity. And then once you've got there, I think the next step is just having some courage to get started, which is why I really like the challenges, because it gives people a framework. One of the kind of strange contrarian natures of creativity is that it often flourishes the most when we give it constraints. So if you get up in the morning and you go, today I can create anything I want, you may well find that completely overwhelming. But if you get up in the morning and you have a little prompt that says, today you need to take a picture and the theme is stars, you will go around your day and you will look for things with stars in, or you will make something with stars in, you will bake some star cookies, or you'll draw stars in the window with your kids or whatever and get a picture of it. And then you've created something. So sometimes we just need to give ourselves narrow parameters, and that can be completely self-created. Like if you're at home with kids, you could write a load of prompts on bits of paper and stick them in a jar and just pull them out together every day and see what you can come up with. You can join in with online challenges like mine. Like, I don't think it has to be limited to the conventional creativity kind of sphere that we think of. Like, it doesn't have to be photography or painting or writing or music. It could be your creativity, could be how you organize a shelf today, or it could be like, you know, how you gather some things that you find on a walk. It doesn't have to be the school version of creativity. It just has to be you creating something that didn't exist before in the world.
I love that. Yes. And I guess that's one of the things. It's that we all have it in us, don't we? We all have the capacity to. We are all creative. I guess you wouldn't be able to live life if you don't use your sort of intuition and innovation and.
And anyone, if you are capable of telling yourself a ridiculous story of something terrible that's going to happen in your brain, which is every single human, when we're like, oh my God, what if this happens? Then you're capable of creativity. So whenever anyone says to me, "Oh, I'm just not creative," I'm like, well, here's news for you, because here's what your brain is doing all the time. And actually, I think the more we don't give ourselves a physical creative outlet, the more our brains will start to do that and be like, well, I'll just make stuff up in my head then.
Yeah, and there's so many ways that we could do that. And I love the idea of having a focus in the day where you just set yourself a little challenge. That's really great. One of the things that you've done really beautifully is create an online community that seems to be really supportive of each other. And could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so that came about, it really started back in that time when I was on my sofa with my baby, desperately seeking like-minded people, and Instagram gave me that window into it. So straight away I was like, these are my people. And a lot of the time it was people I hadn't been able to find in real life. And I think giving each other the space to have those conversations just had a natural gravity to it that's grown and grown and grown. And so now a huge part of my business and kind of what I do is trying to create space for that community to exist and to flourish. It's a funny thing, because I think a lot of people now have kind of cottoned on to the idea that to have a successful online business, you need an online community. So there's a lot out there of people trying to make them and it not quite hitting the mark, or not feeling as fulfilling and organic in the way that the community I feel I'm so fortunate to have really is. And for me, it's very much like, I live in a really small village in these hills, and not that long ago in human history, like 100 years ago, we would have had a community here of everybody knew each other's business. You couldn't avoid each other. You'd bump into them at the shop, and you'd bump into them at the post office and at the pub and on your walks. And that is missing. We're all missing that. Whatever we have in our lives, you might have a work community or a school community, but we're missing that group of people who know us and see us and are there to check in about the mundane stuff of our lives. So for me, that's what online community has filled the gap of, and it has for so many other people as well. And it's not really about like, is that better or worse? I still have face-to-face community in lots of places in my life as well. But when I'm at home on my own on the sofa, I've got a chronic health condition and I go through periods of time where it's really hard for me to be getting out regularly, knowing that I can literally just pick up my phone and be immersed in a community that understands me, we understand one another, and we're showing up with kind of grace and with love for each other, is just the hugest asset. And our modern lives do not support that in the way that we are, I think, wired to do it. I know anyone who's raised a kid will understand me when I say, like, we are not meant to do that on our own, sealed into houses, completely solitary, surrounded by the only people you get to hang out with when you're on maternity leave are other people on maternity leave, because everybody else is in the capitalist system and at work. So there's no one with any different perspectives, there's no one with any experience, it's just you guys struggling on your own. And so to be able to tap into a wider community, I think it's an amazing gift. And I think as human kind evolves and as our lives evolve, accepting it and embracing it and seeing the ways it can bring us positive connection is going to serve us a lot better than trying to fight it, like as if it's a tide we're going to be able to hold back.
It certainly feels that way right now, doesn't it? It feels like getting away from it. Although I love that I've seen the community that you've created seems to be really nice and supportive. That's not everybody's experience of online communities, is
it? No. And I know a lot of people are terrified of like Twitter or Facebook groups where they can just be savage because everything is 50-50. So people bring the great stuff online and they also bring the less great stuff to their internet selves. And it's really about finding and cultivating, I think, a place where like-minded people can be. And I have a really strange experience, but I've always been very involved in online community, like back in the day prior to social media. If anyone is old enough to remember this, everyone would hang out on forums and I would get to know people on forums so well. We had this amazing community. It was really, really close. We'd send each other gifts around the world and then we would meet up in real life and there would be this disconnect. There would be this strange thing of like, ah, oh, okay, you're not 100% who I thought you were, or like just mapping the person you knew online to the physical person. And that would take like maybe a day or two of hanging out before it felt like they were the same person. And what I found in particular with Instagram is that disconnect isn't there. And I don't know why. I wish someone would do some like psychological study on this. But something about getting to know somebody through their pictures as well as their words, through the things that they think are important enough to share on Instagram, and bearing in mind that that's very much within my community bubble of people sharing like-minded stuff. But when you meet them, they're exactly who you knew they were. It's like we share something deeper of ourselves when we put out that content instead of just showing up on a forum and speaking the words. I think it's really fascinating because I think it's about the layers we put over ourselves as humans and how we try and hide and present ourselves in different ways. And for all everybody says Instagram is full of artifice and it's, you know, a very filtered version of reality, my experience has been it gives you more of the real person than anything else.
Mm, that's interesting. Yeah, and because that's what I worry about really, is that we aren't really seeing the day-to-day life of people, but there are different ways of seeing through that, aren't there? I'm in a lot of different communities. I've done a lot of training over the years with people who stay in connection because the training has been so deep and niche, and it's been brilliant to sort of grow with those different groups of people. But there is a difference, isn't there, whenever you connect with people who are community of interest than the everyday community that you might have met in the past when you have to go to the post office or the pub, because sure. Often there, and I'm finding that interesting moment, you know, everybody on my street is connecting. We don't know anything about each other really. We have something of interest that we live in the same street and we want to live in a nice street. But really, apart from that, we're all really completely different, you know, in age and in, you know, the work that we do in the world and some certain beliefs. But actually, it's finding ways to connect with humans, whether that's in a community of interest or whether that's just because it's a community of place and where you need to be and need to get on.
I think that what's really interesting as well, if you think about that, is there are so many beautiful things about connecting with people of like-minded interests. So much, like, it's given me so much permission to be myself. But I also think it's probably a contributing factor to this really black and white political spectrum that's happening right now, especially in the States, where people have zero tolerance for people expressing the opposite views. And I count myself amongst them. I have very little tolerance for, like, listening to Trump supporters, for example, sharing their views. But we know, like, looking at, like, the Northern Ireland peace process, like, actually peace happens when people do listen to each other and find some sort of common ground. And I think you're right that when we only group around interest and shared views, there's a danger of it being an echo chamber.
Mm, yes, I've thought a lot about that, especially with what's happened this, you know, in the last year with the Labour and Conservative.
Yeah.
We've only got two options in this country, although there are some parties. It's very polarised, and there are a lot of issues that are very polarised right now, and I've always really struggled with that. Now, how can it be one or the other? It just doesn't work. If it doesn't work for everybody, then it doesn't work. Yeah. You know, we could keep shouting louder and louder about our views and our opinions to make ourselves heard over somebody else, but really that's not going to make those people believe or think or do what you want them to do. So the need, it feels for me, is that we listen a lot more to each other, and we can do that both online and in person, but actually finding people maybe the answer, thinking about what we've said, maybe part of it is, you know, having a resourced place where you are surrounded by people who are supportive and who you know trust to have like-minded views and interests, but also cultivating at the same time relationships with other people who aren't necessarily thinking and doing what you do, but maybe, you know, the people who live around you, and checking in to different podcasts and different forums and different groups to hear and see and listen, and really try to listen to what people are saying, to try to understand with compassion. I think that for me feels like where we need to go right now is hearing everyone.
And I think, like, it's so interesting because you say that, like, the people in your neighbourhood you connect with, the thing you're connecting on is a shared commonality that's not about what you believe. It's not about your ideals and your values. It's just about, like, a circumstance that you happen to share. And if you love someone and then find out that they hold opposing views to you, I think that's a very different experience to just meeting someone and the first thing you know about them is their opposing views, which would be your experience on something like Twitter. And you're right, like, the internet is not brilliant for that. It's not brilliant for kind of setting up connection regardless of views. And I think that that's beautiful for when we need it, but we do still need to make space for the other side of it in our lives. And right now, I don't know of any alternative to that just being based on real world connection. Like, you know, you love your daughter's teacher and then find out that maybe they vote a different way to you. That could be a really valuable place for you to meet and discuss and kind of just see different sides of things.
Yeah, I love it. It's really tapping into a lot of the things that I've been thinking about, and how we give and receive criticism. And and that on a micro level is what we need to be able to do on a macro level, you know, at a very small level. You know, I've been thinking a lot about how I give and receive difficult feedback, and I know I can be very defensive sometimes, but I also know that, for example, if my partner comments on something that I've done with my kids that I could have done better, if I've heard him tell me 10 times all of the things that he's appreciated or witnessed or enjoyed about the way I parented, then I can hear that one thing. But if I've had a tough day and I haven't had loads of positive feedback recently or even being noticed for the effort that I'm putting in, and then I hear a criticism, I really don't like it and I can't handle it. And I feel like probably there's versions of that as we go up into bigger groups. If we are able to share the things that we enjoy, that we're grateful for, the moments and the beauty, then when we want to and need to share something that's difficult, we're able and we're with people who can receive that. But if we are actually only seeing the things that we don't like and, you know, highlighting those, then all you're doing is building up resistance, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it sort of, it ties in somewhere with what we said earlier about negative emotion and like criticism, receiving criticism or hearing someone with opposing views to you is a negative experience. Like, it physically in our body, for most of us, it feels like a negative emotion more than a positive emotion. And so, of course, we're defensive and we try and get away from it and we try and do everything to avoid it happening. We think something's wrong, but maybe it means there's something right, and maybe that's how we grow as a species and how we get to pass this phase that we've kind of backed ourselves into.
Yes. We're at very interesting times, aren't we? You know, who knows? I think it's unlikely that we're going to go back to exactly the way things were before. And so hopefully if people have some time to really see what they really do enjoy and want more of in their life, and also what they really don't want, we are going to be in a better position to move forwards. And I do believe, obviously, big things need to happen at political level to change the way that we live. But actually, it's going to be individuals deciding for themselves that maybe they don't need as much stuff, or maybe they appreciate having more time with family, on these things will have a ripple effect that lead out into the world, that change our values and change the way that we think.
I really hope so. And I think it's really interesting, like the papers are still trying to spin it as a negative thing, but like people stocking up on home baking ingredients and they're sold out in all the shops. People, like all the gardening websites, all the gardening centres are completely sold out of everything, and everyone wants to grow their own vegetables. Everyone's like going out for walks, and the press is like, oh, these people going out for walks and driving, like it's a terrible thing. But what it shows to me is everyone always wanted to do more of that. They just didn't have the capacity and the time and the space. And as soon as you take that pressure off, people start going back to who we've always been and being more connected and living our lives in a much more slow and gentle and sustainable way. And I really hope that that is one of the changes that comes from this, is people realize actually, like, we've been had by capitalism. It's made us think that the goal is something completely different to what we want it to be.
Brilliant. Oh, I love it. I love that we've moved all over the place in what we've talked about, but that actually it feels like we've come to some sort of place where maybe we can wrap it up and know that we've put the world to rights.
Yes, yeah, we've got it all sorted.
Actually, you know, I do feel that the things that we're saying, they really ring true to my heart, and it sounds like they do to you. Being more present, being more connected to the beauty of the world and the small things, and also acknowledging what's difficult is what's going to see us through from now. So before we finish, I wondered if there was anything that you wanted to share that would be useful for our listeners at home about the work that you do. Where can they contact you? Where can they learn more about you and what you do?
Sure. So I have a podcast called Hashtag Authentic, which is all about people who are using the internet in interesting ways to make their stuff happen in the world. I also have a joint podcast with my friend Jen called Letters from a Hopeful Creative, which is for creative business owners. On Instagram and everywhere else, I'm Me and Orla, because Orla's my daughter and that's how it all started. So meandorla.co.uk will signpost you to everything else. And my book on Instagram and creative photography is also called Hashtag Authentic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Brilliant.
Cool.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope it inspires you to follow your path of deep connection. I love sharing this information so much, and I'll always share any relevant links in my show notes. If you like the show, please consider supporting it at patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. This is where you'll find bonus episodes, giveaways, and behind-the-scenes content from me, as well as having my huge heartfelt thanks for any support that you can give me. It really helps with the viability of the show. You can get most of what will be on offer for as little as £3 per month. The Patreon offer for this episode is a signed copy of Sarah's amazing best-selling book, Hashtag Authentic, Finding Creativity and Building a Community on Instagram and Beyond. You can enter the draw for this giveaway by leaving a comment on the site and letting us know how you feel about any of the things we talked about today. I love hearing your thoughts. This offer will close on the 14th of July. Please also subscribe on whatever app you use by clicking that little subscribe button below. That way you'll get all of the upcoming episodes straight into your device. And please leave a review on iTunes. It's so helpful to our ratings. The music that opens and closes the show is actually by my very own dad, Ray Johnson. Thanks, Dad. And you can hear more of his music at soundcloud.com/visionray.